My boys and girls, children of all ages, we are such good shoe. We welcome you to the podcast about anything and everything wrestling. Up above me, we have Shane.
Voila.
We have Isaac.
Oh, hello.
I'm Dozer. Isaac, lead us into this.
Man, I am so excited about this interview. We had such a good time. I am genuinely excited about this one, and I'm not even going to waste any time here. We're just going to get right into this one. We got none other than Johnny B. Bad himself, Marvelous Mark Merrow. And we're just going to get right into this. Absolutely. We're just going to get right into this one. So thank you so much for joining us on Such Good Shoot. Check us out at suchgoodshoot.com. And here we go. All right. Thank you so much for joining us. Today we have a very special guest. We have Mark Merrow. Oh, and we actually have Dozer popping in right now too. So Dozer, Mark Merrow.
Pleasure.
It's really great to have you here. Huge fans, very excited. And I kind of want to just sort of start back at the beginning. So, I mean, early on you were into boxing, you were a boxer. You weren't in the wrestling. You didn't really have any aspirations for that early on. I mean, you were one hell of a boxer.
You know, I was I was with the U.S. boxing team in 1981. And the Olympics were boycotted in 80, and I was down in Colorado Springs, Colorado, at the U.S. Olympic Training Center in 81. But I went on to win like 4 state titles in New York, and boxing was my passion. And unfortunately, some turn of events in life, you know, led me into the world of professional wrestling, and I started that at I signed my first contract when I was 31 years old.
Wow. That's crazy. I mean, yeah. And you won what, 3 Golden Gloves in a row?
Yeah. And in New York, I think it was 81, 82. I won the Empire State Games, which is like a state title, which is I won the gold medal in that. Won the state AAU and a couple Golden Gloves also. So it was a good little run I had there for a while.
That's wild. And looking back, I mean, knowing what we know now about like CTE and concussions and stuff, do you feel sort of like a mixed blessing that life led you on the path that it did? Where, I mean, professional wrestling obviously is going to have a lot of that, especially in the area you were fighting. But I feel like boxing is a sport that, like, you're kind of, if you spend a career at it, you're going to get punched in the head a lot.
You know, that's a great question. And the difference is, though, you know, boxing, you're only having matches every, you know, couple times a year, though, you know.
Okay.
But, you know, you're sparring and training. But, you know, in the world of professional wrestling, you know, I remember we were doing like 230, 250 events a year or some crazy number like that. And, you know, obviously you're not always getting hit in the head, but some of the falls that we've taken or when it calls for a chair shot or something like that, it does. I've had my bell rung quite a few times.
Oh, sure. Especially in that era.
I've had more concussions in wrestling than I ever did in boxing.
Wow. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I mean, and it's one of the reasons why I guess they really try so hard, I guess, at least in WWE these days, to avoid those kind of things. But I can't imagine, you know, just a regular back bump, like, yeah, you know, is good if you already have a concussion or two. You know, I'm sure that little rattles the brain a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I always tell people say, well, isn't wrestling, you know, predetermined? I said, well, but gravity is real.
Okay. Yeah.
When someone throws you over the top rope out of the ring and you land on the cement, that's real.
Yeah, I mean, I tripped on some ice and I broke my leg. So, like, falling hurt.
But you know, guys, I got to tell you, I'm so blessed. I wrestled on and off for 14 years, and I've gone through a lot of surgeries. Like any wrestler that you guys will interview will tell you the same thing. You know, we go through a lot of trauma to our body. But, you know, it was so many great memories, too. You know, I mean, you think of the good, the bad in life, and I'm really blessed. I just came back from an autograph signing in Albany, New York. And it's just so cool. I mean, I haven't wrestled in 20 years, and I see the fans that show up and how passionate they are and friendly and happy to see you. And I don't know. I just get such a joy out of seeing or relating or having conversations with fans, especially fans that remember me from back when I wrestled.
That's awesome, man. That's really good. Cause I know like it must be such a different like feeling from when you're like in the middle of it and you know you've got an angle going and you have heat or whatever it might be, and like dealing with fans at that point as opposed to like later in your career when you're separated from it and like people are just happy to see you again.
Just amazing. It amazes me that people can remember some things that where I go, oh my gosh, I don't remember wrestling that person. They go, yeah, I was sitting ringside when you wrestled so-and-so. And you go, oh yeah, I did, you know? Just things that are such a blur because you do so many matches and you're wrestling guys so many times or traveling around the world with different, you know, events and things. And it like comes together. It's like a blur. It's like, did you wrestle so-and-so? And you're like, have to think back. Oh yeah, I did. That's right. You know?
Yeah.
But then there's guys that stand out that were just phenomenal to work with that you always remember those matches, you know?
Yeah. And there were some really good ones too, throughout the career, man. In WCW, you just had a hell of a run and, you know, getting into that, I mean, you mentioned, you know, crazy turn of events. What happened that led to professional wrestling from boxing?
Well, while I was with the U.S. boxing team, I realized at that time I was one of the best fighters in the country. And so I decided to turn professional in boxing. And we had a five-fight contract with ESPN lined up. We had so many good. I had my first professional boxing match scheduled in my hometown right in New York. So it was incredible. Oh, wow. And I was so excited. I never trained harder for anything in my entire life. I mean, I ran more miles. I did more wind sprints. And 2 weeks before my first professional boxing match, I had my nose shattered in an accident. I needed reconstructive surgery. And the doctor said it would be almost a year before I could come back and really start having the full contact again. And, you know, and I kept thinking to myself in that year, I'm going to come back in 1 year. I'm going to be champ of the world, man. And I'm going to keep training hard. But I really started hanging out with the wrong people, man. I started, you know, it's like my whole life, I was always training, whether it was hockey, football, boxing, lacrosse. I was always doing something where I was involved in a sport. So I never had time off. And I started hanging out with some guys that would go to parties and things like that. And that's when the drinking, the drugs started. And I remember being at parties drunk and high going, hey, guys, I'm coming back in 1 year. I'm going to be champ of the world. And I would do this week after week, month after month. And eventually 1 year turned into 10 years of drug addiction, you know. And I just totally ruined my career in boxing. And I was doing a job I could get with my limited high school education was in construction. Like I was working for a pool company, and I was one of the guys that would shape the pools after the backhoe goes in. So I'd be at the bottom of the pool, you know, digging and shaping with a shovel. And I just remember just thinking to myself, how did I get here, man? How did I throw away 10 years of my life? And then one day I had a bunch of friends over my apartment, and my buddy was flipping through the TV channels with the remote control. And he landed on professional wrestling. And I go, hey, guys, and I just looked, I got this like aha moment. I go, guys, I can do that. My buddies busted out laughing. Look at the size. I think it was like the Road Warriors were on or something, you know. They go, look at the size of those guys, man. They're going to pick you up over their head and throw you right out of that ring. And I remember just saying, no, I can do that. My brother goes, Mark, you're 30 years old. Wouldn't you start a pro career at this age? And I just remember saying those two words. And I shared all my presentations. I believe. And I had to take action. So the action I had to take towards that dream, that goal, was find out whether it was a wrestling school. And I was living in Venice, Florida at the time. And there was a wrestling school in Tampa. It was Boris Malenko, Dean and Joe's father, had a wrestling school in Tampa, Florida. So I started, it was about an hour away. So I started driving there after work on weekends. 1 year later, at 31 years old, was when I signed my first contract at WCW as the character Johnny B. Badd.
Johnny B. Badd. Wow, man. So did you work with, like, train with Dean and stuff at that point?
No, Dean and Joe were pretty much on the road all the time.
They were always
they were over in Japan and stuff. And Boris, his dad, was pretty much ran the whole school. So I didn't see Dean and Joe very much. But when they did show up, it was like watching these guys that were from a different planet. I mean, they were like run the rope so fast, and they do all these moves, and they just knew things you'd never even dreamed you I still wouldn't even know, you know?
Yeah, Dean.
They've been around the business for so long. They were just so talented and amazing. And it's really cool because Dean or Joe has become a pretty good friend. Like, he's actually, when I've done some presentations out in the Tampa area, he's actually come out and watched some of my presentations. We've gone to lunch together, and he's awesome. A great guy. And I just, and Dean, of course, Dean, I wrestled in WCW. So I have a kind of connection to both of them, to their whole family.
Wow, that's really cool, Megan. What a great family to help get you into the business.
Yeah, it was an amazing, and you know, and when you first get in, I didn't really know the realm of what they've done or brought to the world of professional wrestling like I do now.
Yeah, that's really wild, man. So you get to WCW, and they offer you this character based on Little Richard. Where did that come from? Because I mean, Little Richard is a character, like, absolutely. But like, if I think of Little Richard, I don't think of, like, the first thing I think of is not someone going out and whooping ass.
Yes, me neither. This was a creation of Dusty Rhodes, which I'm going to be really honest, guys. I can look back on my wrestling career. The most fun I ever had was being mentored and working with Dusty Rhodes, becoming the character Johnny B. Badd, you know, because here's this boxer from New York, you know, playing this flamboyant guy from Macon, Georgia, with a different accent. And I'll never forget, like, Dusty would, well, first of all, I never thought I looked like Little Richard, you know, until Terry Runnels was the makeup artist for CNN back then. And I just remember Dusty telling her what he wanted my look to look like. And, you know, she put the makeup on me and did up my hair and penciled in my eyes and my mustache. And next thing I know, when she spun me around the chair, I'm like, damn, I do look like Little Richard, you know?
it was uncanny at points.
Moments I'll never forget.
With the feather boa and shit. Oh, like, yeah.
Well, anyways, so to make a long story short, guys, Dusty would meet me before the matches early. I'd get there a little early, and he'd say, now, this is what I want you to do. I want you to walk up to that microphone and say, I'm so pretty, I should be born a little girl. And I say, okay. So I walk up, I go, I'm so pretty, I should have been born a little girl. He goes, no, do it like this. And I got to tell you guys, we get laughing so hard. And then he goes, I want you to say, I'm a bad man. And so it just took off, man. And then we were just adding new things and coming up with the Bad Blaster and throwing frisbees and shooting out the Bad Bucks. And it was just crazy, man. It was like so much fun, you know. And I got to tell you, the one thing I did that when I see a wrestler coming up now is investing in yourself. Now, my first professional career, my first 1 year contract was only $75,000. Now, I know it sounds like a lot of money, especially back in 1991, it was a lot of money. But when you invest that money back into your character with flamboyant capes and the Bad Blaster and frisbees and putting that money into yourself, the character really started getting over, you know, because I always tell people, man, when you want to be successful, invest in yourself. You know, I have a friend that said to me one time, and it really made sense. He goes, he just watched an inspirational speaker. And they said, you know, at the end of the presentation, he had a table full of books and DVDs. And the guy said, well, what can I get you? And he goes, I want one of everyone. And I'm thinking, man, is that worth it? And he goes, maybe not, but I'm worth it. You know, and I thought, wow, that really makes sense. Like, invest in yourself. So I invested in the character Johnny B. Badd. And the cool thing was, is my next year, my salary doubled, but they also gave me, like, I think it was like $100,000 towards costume expense that I could turn the receipts and they'd pay me back, you know? So of course I use every penny of that money, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how the character really took off. And that's what I really missed when I went to the WWE, as I couldn't take that character with me.
Yeah, and that was one of the things is one of the friends of the show, Dennis Day Jr., from What Do You Say with DDJ, he wanted me to ask about that. And do you think that, you know, given the how much success you had with him in WCW, you think that Johnny B. Badd would have gotten over in WWF?
Or do you think at that time, I believe it would have, because it was a lot based on characters and things like that, you know? And of course, the WWF would, or WWE, whatever you want to call it, would have, they would invest in the character more, where like I remember they even had Little Richard at one of the WrestleManias, you know?
Yep.
Imagine putting me and Little Richard together in something, you know, and we go back and forth going, oh, hush, Little Richard. Oh, hush, Johnny, you know, back in, who knows, you know, there's so many things incredible. You think may have happened, but you know, guys, I gotta tell you, I've said this before on other podcasts, was that I look at all the paths I took in life. You know, people say, well, why did you stay with WCW? And I look at all the paths I took, good or bad or indifferent, whatever. They all led to right where I am today. And guys, in life, you know, people go, I want to be happy. I want to be happy. But more than being happy is being content in life, because happiness comes and goes. You know, you're not happy 24/7, you know,
yeah.
But you know, being content in life is so important. And I'm at peace and being content. And that brings joy, because it isn't about our circumstance or situation. It's how we respond to it that makes all the difference in life.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's great. And jumping back to you talking about your costume budget and stuff, I know Shane had a question about that.
Yeah, my girlfriend, Aaron, shout out Aaron real quick, and I, on the way back from vacation a couple weeks ago, were listening to an episode of the AEW podcast, and they had it with Sandra Lee, the head seamstress of AEW. And she was telling a story about how she broke into the business, which was that she made a robe for you.
Yes.
Yep. And okay, so you do remember this. And
I remember she, that. Yep. Are you kidding? Oh,
yeah.
So let me share the story. Was that I didn't know who to contact to make these flamboyant costumes. So I actually put an ad in the paper, and she answered.
Oh, okay.
And so we brought her over to the house, we interviewed her, and then she started making us. You know, started making me stuff, and they were getting, she got so good at it though. You know, like, I mean, the first ones were like, you know, but she is so talented. I mean, obviously she makes everybody's stuff now, but that's how she got not only to do all my stuff, but then I would turn around to other guys. I'd tell, you know, whether it was, you know, my buddies of mine that I travel with, I go, man, have her make your costumes. And of course, then she became the head person for WWF or WWE. And now I think she's with AEW, but she's a sweetheart of a person. Oh, she could take my imagination and put it into a creation. You know, I go, I want it to shoot like flames or something.
You know? I mean, it all started with an eight-legged spider. Oh no, 16-legged spider. Because she was saying that you wanted a spider on your robe for the first one, and then she ended up putting too many legs on the sides. Yeah.
Yeah, like she would look at me sometimes with this look like, you want what? But she would, I want flames on it, or I want this, or I want this. I want to say, it's a good day to be a bad man. You know, Johnny loves Philly. If I was wrestling in Philadelphia, you know, or whatever it would be, she would create it, man. And she, just blessed to have her as a friend today and seeing her so successful with her creations and her own company now. It's just great, great.
Because that's got to be a hell of a job. Like I couldn't imagine doing that in a year.
Well, I mean, it's crazy because, like, you know, you think about it, and like being a seamstress or something like that is kind of one of those professions that is like probably more and more and more niche than it ever was before. And so to get a gig like that, you know, it's like job security and also probably pretty fun.
Well, she is that good, and she deserves everything she has. And she's a hard worker, and she makes a lot of costumes. A lot of the top costumes you see on all the shows she has made or is a part of the, you know, the creation of them.
That's really cool. Well, yeah, it's awesome that you were able to be the first one, man, and be the one that sort of got her in the door. And I know that in that interview, she was talking about the spider and how you wanted a spider, and she just threw on twice as many legs. And she was like super scared. She's like, oh man, I messed this up. And you're like, I love it. This is incredible. That's just what I want.
Oh, you know, I don't ever remember even, like, she made me I guess hundreds of costumes, you know?
Yeah.
Cause she was, I mean, she basically worked with me full time as Johnny B. Bad's, you know, seamstress. Cause she wasn't, you know, she had her, she just do it out of her home. She didn't have a business or anything. So to speak. And she would just, I can't ever remember like being disappointed in something she made me, you know, she'd bring me over. She even come up with ideas and bring me over something. I go, oh, that's so cool. You know? And so, but anyways, I'm just happy to see her doing well today. She's a really nice person.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. And yeah, so after that, so let's talk a little bit about WWF. You were the first guaranteed contract that Vince gave. Is that correct?
Yes. You know, actually 3 years before I signed with WWF, Vince flew me into Stamford and we had dinner at his house and we had a great conversation. And he said, what's going to take to get you here? And I said, well, Vince, I want a guaranteed contract like I have at WCW. He goes, Mark, we offer opportunities here at WWF. If I can't give you a guaranteed contract. And I said, well, I'm not going to leave a guaranteed contract to come up here for an opportunity.
Yeah.
And we had a great dinner. It was no animosity. And he goes, you know, he looked at me and he shook my hand. He said, someday you and I are going to do business. Now, fast forward 3 years later, my contract's up and he contacts me and he says, what's it going to take? And I said, well, Vince, as you know, I'm getting a good guaranteed contract at WCW. I'm ready to sign another one. Here's what I want. I want a guaranteed contract. And he goes, done. I go, well, it's not done yet here. I want a signing bonus. And he gave me a very hefty signing bonus. He said, done. Then I said, I want my wife to fly everywhere I fly. And he says, I've never heard that one before. He goes, and I go, and here's an idea. My wife is very pretty. I could use her as my valet. He goes, no, let's just worry about you. But he goes, we agreed to this, the terms. He agreed to it. You know, he wanted me that bad. And so anyways, he sends me a ticket to come to Stamford to sign my first deal and go over creative and everything. Meeting with creative team to decide what we're going to do with the character and so on. So when he sends me my ticket, I realized there's only one ticket here. So I call him up. I said, hey, Vince, the deal is my wife flies everywhere I fly. He goes, to sign a contract? And I said, yes. So he goes, all right. So he sends me another ticket. So my wife, Rena, who became Sable, flies with me. And remember, I've already asked him if she could be my valet. And he was kind of poo-pooed the idea, thinking, yeah, let me just worry about you. You know, every guy thinks their wife is beautiful or whatever. And I'll never forget, we walked in the room. He goes, I got to put her on TV. that's how Sable started. And of course, she got over huge and did great things in the business. And, you know, no regrets. Just we were happy to be able to travel together and share that part of our lives in the business.
Did that first guaranteed contract cause any animosity from any of the guys who'd been there and with their quote unquote opportunities forever?
You know, not realizing it so much back then. I know guys would be upset, but more so after the fact, you know, mm-hmm. It was like, I never realized how much it affected or hurt other people in the industry. But when you look back, it opened the doors for everybody.
That's, you know, the thing.
I mean, so at the time, guys were really upset saying, my God, he gets, because not only that, it wasn't long after I won the Intercontinental belt, I blew out my knee and I needed 8 months off. Now, normally you would make very little money if you were injured like that, when you had to take that much time off. You get very little money from the company when you're injured. So, but I'm getting this huge guaranteed contract every week, getting paid the same for 8 months sitting home. So obviously it doesn't sit well with the guys who are on the road making less than I'm making sitting home, you know? So it did cause a lot of animosity. And when I look back now, I can understand why, you know, it was tougher to make friendships or have lasting relationships with people because of the fact we were kind of gifted in a way that we had those opportunities. And of course, then they're pushing Sable to the roof. I mean, her merchandise sold just under Steve Austin's, you know. It was incredible how well she was doing with everything, and not everybody was happy. Of course, when they made her a wrestler and made her a world champion, you know, it didn't sit well with a lot of people either. So there was a lot of things that at the time you're in it, you're not seeing it like you do when you step back and go, wow, I can understand why people would be upset or mad or whatever.
But you, I mean, like you said, like that's, it's also one of those things where, yeah, like you might've broken with tradition and the fact of the contract, but now, you know, like it also offers some more protections for these guys who go out and risk their bodies every day, you know, so that when they do get injured, they do have some sort of like safety net where they're not just left out to dry.
Yeah, I really think we broke the glass ceiling, you know, and now it's very unusual for a guy not to get a guaranteed contract
at WWE.
So, you know, it was a blessing. It was, I'm glad that we were the first, and hopefully someday when they look back on the history of wrestling, they'll see that how important that was for other wrestlers.
Yeah, I mean, I think that in itself is important. And I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of like, you know, like the idea of trying to unionize the guys or whatever, get them in a way where they can have some sort of say, at least healthcare of some sort, you know, that's provided for them, you know, things like that. Like, you look at that as being like a next step in that evolution where, like, you know, like as a business, they actually take care of the performers during and after careers, because in the end, you're sacrificing a lot for somebody else to... Yes. You know, and not to say Vince hasn't gone out and done the same thing, you know, because kudos to him. He's gone out and done some insane stuff for a guy his age. But, you know, it's still.
If you guys remember when I left the business, I did speak out against a lot of the issues, because we've seen, you remember back in the 90s, we lost many wrestlers due to, the drugs, the steroids, whatever you want to call it, you know, there was a lot of issues back then. And it wasn't so much talking about what others did, but it was things that me personally was able to get away with or not have done. You know, I mean, I think the whole time I was with WWF, I think there was one drug test, you know. So when I spoke out against it, and obviously I'm vilified from wrestling and blackballed and probably will never be invited to a WrestleMania or whatever.
Never say never. Never say never.
But here's the thing, guys, and you got to be proud of who you're looking at the mirror every day, because of that, because of me and some other guys that stood up, you know, now any wrestler that ever stepped foot in a WWE ring gets free drug and alcohol rehab. I mean, anybody. You know, so I don't care if you wrestled 20, 30 years ago and you have a problem today, the WWE will pay for your drug and alcohol rehab. They also have some of the strictest drug testing now, Olympic drug testing they have there now. We never had that back when we were there. So there's so many changes that have happened because of, you know, people standing up and saying, you know, enough is enough. Let's save lives.
Yeah.
And that's what it's all about.
Yeah, that's awesome. And yeah, and I think that's, you know, maybe not to the extent of the drug and alcohol testing with your contract signing, but, you know, like being able to provide a life, you know, for these guys is indeed saving lives, because, you know, I mean, as you well know, like when you start getting in those places where you feel desperate or you feel hopeless or you feel like you have no other options, that's when it's really easy to fall into those bad habits and fall into addiction and fall into, you know, like just say, you know, like, oh, you know, like this is going to make me feel better. And I, you know, it's not like I have anything else I, you know, to look forward to. And so being able to know that you have that job security, know that, like, you know, just is an extra layer of protection for these guys. And I think you see it in the way that a lot of the guys in the business today act. You know, you look at guys like the New Day and like, you know, like what they do is they go and they play video games online, and like, you know, like that's, and it's like so different from, you know, growing up when I was a kid and watching the business and like what, you know, like the idea of what these guys were doing in their spare time was. It's like,
yeah, it's so much more personalized now. Like when they have these TV shows that, you know, they go out and find old memorabilia from the wrestlers and stuff. It's kind of cool, you know, and then seeing the biographies on A&E that really share some of the in-depth things of professional wrestling. It's yeah. it's like seeing them open up more and the honesty and being forthright with things. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. And I think, you know, like I know we're getting down towards the end here, and I want to give you a chance to talk about what you're doing now, but Shane actually works with a young woman who got to see you speak. So I'm going to let him tell this story because it's another funny one.
Yeah. Yesterday at work, one of my employees was talking to me about what I was doing today. And I was like, oh, you know, I got to, you know, get up and, you know, interview a, you know, former wrestler or whatever. And she knows that I do that. And she's like, oh, what's his name? And I was like, oh, Mark Marrow. And she's like, that sounds familiar. And I was like, maybe not. She's younger than I am, and I'm 25. So just to give you an idea, she doesn't know anything about wrestling.
Right.
You know, and then she was like, what was his nickname? And I was like, oh, he's the Wild Man, Marvelous. She's like, oh, that sounds so familiar. And then so she like goes and pulls up her high school like Instagram, the school, and then scrolls down, clicks on a picture, and turns around. I was like, oh, yep, that's Mark Marrow.
Oh, that's cool.
So
And that's in Columbus.
Yeah, it's so incredible.
Cincinnati. Because,
I travel, you know, when I travel or I go to restaurants or something, someone always comes up to me and said, I seen you at my school. Now, remember, we were averaging 230 events a year for the last 14 years up until the pandemic came. So I've spoken at so many schools in front of well over a million students. So it's incredible. And of course, many kids have seen, you know, videos have gone viral of my presentations online people have seen. So it's been just there's no greater joy than helping another person.
And so that's what you're doing now. You want to talk a little bit about your charity?
You know, it's called Champion of Choices, and we travel all over mainly schools, middle school, high school, colleges, and in churches and corporations even, and we share about choices. We're defined by the choices we make in life, but I deal with a lot of people that are going through depression, anxiety, being bullied or abused, suicidal thoughts, and of course the isolation and loneliness that this pandemic has brought to many family is just off the charts. Suicide is at the all-time high. So we deal with a lot of families that are going through some major adversity, and we hope we can help them in some way, especially when we can do live events and we can meet with students after the events and discuss options in life. And I think my presentation gives people hope.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I know that, yeah, they're very real. They're very raw. The videos that I've seen, at points difficult to watch, but I think anything that that causes growth or starts growth is usually difficult to deal with. Otherwise, you're not forced into growth. So, I think
by touching a person's heart is how you change their mind. And sometimes we take for granted the very things in life we should appreciate. Sometimes we need that reminder that just like a Father's Day's coming up, you know, and I'm getting ready to, which is really cool because I'm speaking at a church here in the Atlanta area, Piedmont Church. And it's so cool to be back out there live for the first time since the pandemic, since March 12th of 2020. It'll be my first live event. Now, I've been doing virtual events for schools. And of course, you know, it's great to get letters and messages from students on how it changed or even saved their life, but there's nothing like being live in front of an audience. I mean, just like wrestling, you know.
Yeah.
I really felt for the guys when the pandemic first came, and you seen these guys out there before they had all the video people out there. They had
or even nothing, sound,
you know? And I've been in that place where with WCW, I remember one time we had a wrestle at a local nightclub. And there was nobody there. And to wrestle someone with nobody there is one of the hardest things to do. You know, you can't feed off the audience. Nobody's really cheering for you or booing you or whatever it would be, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you saw it in those first couple of weeks where like you're still like trying to break old habits of like trying to get the crowd amped up.
Yes,
and like,
yeah.
And then you're like, oh, there's nobody here.
And it was really funny because your reaction after you do a big move or something, you look to the hard camera or you look to the crowd and, you know, look for approval. And it was almost like, you know, see these guys just automatically react to like a body slam or drop kick or whatever. They get to go in there like there's nobody there, you know.
Yeah, it was very awkward. I think that they really I mean, kudos to them for making the best out of it after, I mean, because that WrestleMania was really, I mean, it was hard to watch without any sound, without any crowd. It was
You know, I think it was that was the one Drew McIntyre won the title, right?
Yeah.
My heart went out to the poor guy because
seriously,
you know, he worked his whole life to get to this point to win the belt, man, you know, and to do it at a particular time in history where there's nobody there, you know?
Yeah, and he really did an amazing job of
he was so hot. Yeah.
Carrying that company through a time where you could, like, I mean, it was kudos to him.
Yeah.
He deserves every bit of accolade that he's gotten because he's a great wrestler. And God, man, yeah, that was really sad to see in a way. And then defend it at the next WrestleMania and lose it.
Yeah, well, now they are back in front of live audiences again, are they?
For the most part,
coming up soon for
yeah, I saw Raw last night, parts of it, and I noticed they're still in front of the video people, you know. Is that what you call it, video people?
I don't know. I think they call it the Thunderdome. Yeah, they stole the Mad Max gimmick.
I just know how difficult that is. And I'm glad I never really had to do that, except the time I just shared with you guys. Yeah. I know how difficult that is.
Yeah. Well, I'm really glad you're able to get back out and do what you love and make a difference. And you know, if you can help one kid, you know, that's awesome, man. And it sounds like you're helping a lot of them. So, kudos to you. Thank you so much for joining us. I don't want to take up any more of your time, but it really has been a pleasure. And thank you so much for spending some time with us.
You guys are great.
Thank you very much. Thank you
so much, man. And I really appreciate you having me on your podcast, and I wish you all the best. And I want to especially thank all the fans out there. I mean, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today if it wasn't for you guys. And the platform I had in professional wrestling to launch this career as a speaker and inspiring and changing and even saving other people's lives. So thank you and God bless you all.
Thank you, man. Thank you for all the years of entertainment.
All right, guys. Take care. God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye.